you will never be the best them. You know, you can never be more than them,
yeah,
or whatever it is. But you can win, and by winning, I mean being the most, you know, happiest and more true to yourself by really embracing who you are, because no one can be more you than you. When you understand that, okay, being different actually serves a purpose, then you feel a little bit more brave to take that step forward into doing something a little bit different. Bitcoin allowed me to discover what it is that I wanted to explore.
Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' personal transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, or send a few sats from link in the description. Today, our guest is Tip and Z. Through dynamic performances and videos, Tip and Z sees a bright future with Bitcoin. She artfully explores the multifaceted aspects of Bitcoin, intertwining a variety of themes with beats, poetry, and visual storytelling. Tip's background is traditional finance as an equity analyst managing a public equities fund and an investor in early stage venture capital. Welcome, Tip.
Thanks for having me.
I know that you just came back from a sprint of Bitcoin conferences. I saw a video on Twitter, a big boom, that you're like blowing wind to this animal. What's the name of the animal again? Like to raise carbon dioxide?
Oh, the armadillo.
Yeah. That was so funny.
This was at a meetup before Bitblock Boom and they had armadillo racing, and I was like, that's so fascinating, like, is this like a normal thing there? But they were saying like you have to blow on its butt to make it run, and I was like, you guys are joking, right? And then they're like, no, like, go and do it. And so I went and did it, got on my hands and knees, and I was like blowing on its butt and then got it to run. It was hilarious. But I love, like, you know, Bitcoin is just like having fun. And yeah, it's not just about Bitcoin. It's about just like enjoying life.
That would be one of the activities I would like to partake at a Bitcoin conference for sure.
And the winner gets a can of armadillo milk, which I haven't tried yet. I'm too scared to try, but.
Oh, really? Wow. That's a thing.
Yeah, I don't know how they milk them. I have no idea.
Glad to hear that you're kind of traveling the world through Bitcoin conferences. It's always great to experience Bitcoiners live.
So true. And you end up doing the non-touristy things, which is always the best.
Give us a brief version of your life leading towards discovering Bitcoin.
About 20 years ago, my dad was in politics and he was Deputy Prime Minister of Thailand. And so through that, I kind of got this insight into like the inner workings of proof of stake system. Kind of learning from him that it takes more than hard work to make it into the world and try to change the world. And unfortunately, he was a proof of work kind of guy, and he worked really hard and he couldn't make a change. And so from that, I learned like, well, I kind of asked myself, like, what is the thing that enables you to have, I guess, influence over society, over your own life, that allows you to have like a level of freedom where you're not beholden in someone else's system. And I kind of realized that the people who were able to create something in their own reality had access to capital. And it was really the money that changed and shaped the fiat world. That's kind of what I learned as a kid. And so I pursued this path of wanting to understand more about economics and finance. And the global financial crisis actually happened during when I was in high school, when I felt like that was the most relevant class, as opposed to, you know, when you're a kid and you're like learning, you know, sitting in an English class, you're like, okay, I don't care about Shakespeare. That's not relevant. Talking about the GFC, talking about what's actually happening in the world right now, that's really relevant for me. So I ended up kind of going down that finance economics route. And from that, I got a job at New Zealand Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is a fund started off by kind of like arm's length of New Zealand government with the purpose and the mandate of investing so that in New Zealand right now, there's like kind of a big generational gap, lots of baby boomers, not enough workers. And so we had to start investing so that we can help everyone retire. And so through that experience, again, was quite young. I had the opportunity to invest in active equities. So that basically means that we get to pick and choose our stocks, kind of Warren Buffett style, like what is the 10 stocks that we want to hold for the next 10 years. And so had kind of that insight of how do I analyze companies? How do I think about, you know, investing for the long run? And I really love that aspect of thinking about how do I shape the future in the long run. But throughout that whole process, I still kind of felt like, great, I have now this ability to invest, but it still felt a little bit, I felt like an outsider in that system still. It felt like I wasn't the one building the products that shaped the world. I wasn't the one sitting on the boards of these companies that decided what these outcomes would be. I felt like I was just investing in these companies. And so again, I kind of like followed my nose and followed my curiosity into joining a startup and then eventually getting to venture capital, which kind of was really more, had more of a direct touch with the products and the companies. And through that, I really enjoyed that experience, but at the same time, it felt like we were in a little bubble of what we wanted to invest in. And we were doing very well. And I felt like the people in our community were just awesome and that we were killing it. Like, you know, like we were raising larger funds. We were backing really smart, amazing people. But at the same time, it felt like the rest of the world was struggling in a way. And it felt like I was safe, but I just felt like it didn't feel, I still didn't feel connected with, I guess, my wider environment. Then I discovered Bitcoin, then all of that kind of, all of my, I guess, concerns and curiosities I had when I was younger about like, what is my role in society and stuff, it kind of just started to make more sense. And I felt more connected to a lot more people. And I didn't feel so closed off in a way in an ivory tower.
And it's quite a transformation. And I bet it's a process. But do you remember if there were any pivotal moments or realizations that inspired this shift in the focus?
There was this moment that it like kind of just stuck with me. We were driving, my husband was driving us to our in-law's house, and he was like, oh, there's this video on the channel Reason on YouTube created by Alex Gladstein about Bitcoin. Have you seen it? And during this time, I was still working in venture capital, and I watched it, and it was like, I remember we stopped for lunch, and I was like watching it, and I like cried in the car because the video was talking about how Bitcoin is helping people from around the world and providing real use cases for people to fight against authoritarianism and inflation and all these really real problems that I felt like it was very hard to solve. And coming from a developing country like Thailand, I always had that feeling of responsibility of like, I left my own home country to pursue a better life in a developed country like New Zealand, but I feel helpless in trying to, you know, help grow or lift up the country where I'm from. I felt like I just escaped and I wasn't helping anyone. And I was in this beautiful, amazing country, but at the same time, I'm in this job where I'm kind of helping the rich get richer as well. And in that moment, it was like, understanding Bitcoin and understanding what it can do for not just one group of people or making, you know, the Silicon Valley bros richer. It just made me feel like, this is the solution, the thing that I've kind of been trying to find without realizing it. And before that, I didn't really understand what Bitcoin was or what it could do. I thought it was another financial asset, another asset class. But then after that video and kind of the human stories, it made a lot more sense to me. And from then on, it was kind of like, okay, then how does it help people? Like, how can I learn more about this? And I went down the rabbit hole and I spent more and more time thinking about it, wasn't really doing my job that I was supposed to be doing. And then I decided I had to leave my job. And it was really sad because I felt like life would have been easier if I didn't understand Bitcoin. And if I didn't discover Bitcoin, I feel like I'd be kind of, it would be easier, but at the same time, it wouldn't be as fulfilling.
Right. Well, at the same time, like, easy is a subjective term, right? And you may feel that you have, because once you've seen something, you can't unsee it. And for us Bitcoiners, we bear this truth that we know and where the society is going. And oftentimes that's a little bit depressing to know that we're in this downward trend and there's a lot worse things that's yet to happen. But there is a lifeboat that we're all in this together, and the hope aspect of Bitcoin can really bring us a lot of peace going forward. And do you remember at what point you first thought about the question of what is money? Because it seems like you kind of touched upon this of, you know, money talks, right? But do you remember what was your understanding of money throughout the times, seeing it from the backstage of both politics and traditional finance?
When we're like born and living life and kind of like growing up, we're trying to find our place in the world and how we can add value and how we can continue to build a society for the next generation and the next generation. And especially as women, like, you know, we have the responsibility of physically creating the next generation. And so there's this lineage, this passed down through us physically, mentally. And money is really kind of that same system of like energy being passed down and time being passed down through humans. To me, before Bitcoin, money was like something that a group of people had to manage on behalf of everyone else because that was their job. It didn't feel like a tool or a technology. It was just kind of like a part of government. The same way that like people might have felt like the church was a part of like their connection with something bigger, and that was the only way to kind of access something. And so I felt like money was controlled and is part of like a group of people that controlled it. I never questioned it or thought that it was like simply just a way that we exchanged our time and energy. And it's a tool and it's an infrastructure. Now with Bitcoin, I understand.
I love how in your work, you're approaching Bitcoin in a way that's not technical, but you actually explore a lot of the philosophical ideas behind the fundamentals. I tune into your conversation with John Vallis on Bitcoin Rapid Fire, and you shared something that's rather interesting. You mentioned that the movement of legalizing cannabis in Thailand actually made a positive impact on people's adoption of Bitcoin in Thailand. So it goes hand in hand. And how come? Like, where do you see the parallel of Bitcoin and cannabis, and how the legalization of cannabis in Thailand actually pushed Bitcoin forward?
I think it's just like the dynamics of free market. So Bitcoin is the currency of the free market, and you can kind of go on the dark web and buy drugs with Bitcoin. And so it's kind of a way for humans to exchange goods and services, whatever it might be, whether it's legal or illegal. And how can we facilitate that exchange? And that's using value that can't be, you know, that can be sent directly to someone that can't be censored. And so when you have the ability to send value instantly, and it can't be blocked and it can't be diluted and it can't be taken away from you, you're more likely to invest your time and energy into doing something that aligns with your values and what you're interested in. And that might be, you know, growing the magical plant of cannabis and selling it in the free market. The bigger picture is, since Bitcoin now allows us to reap what we sow, we are more likely to be more experimental, more creative, take bigger risks with what we can produce and offer the world, as opposed to kind of playing it safe and buy the books and kind of tick the boxes of someone else's kind of rules and mandates that's determined by the authority that prints the money. Like, there is no authority that prints the money now, so it's a free-for-all. And in Thailand, I think it was like 2 years ago that they legalized cannabis. I think like the market has boomed, like every corner now is like some, like they're selling something. I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm just saying that it happened. I saw like a lounge that says like Bitcoin accepted and they're selling cannabis and stuff. I thought that was really cool.
You definitely touch upon a lot of the sovereignty and agency and not to comply with any rule that's being fed on your desk, instead of to really think about what you're doing in every aspect of your personal life. And let's talk about your work. The first time I saw you perform live, it's in Madeira this March, and it's the first time I saw you perform live. I had goosebumps from start to finish when you're performing on stage. And it was so powerful. And combined with the visual storytelling aspect with all of the words displayed, it was a very powerful package, I have to say. So I want to check in with you on some of the lyrics you touched on. So let's start with your work, Reality. And in this one, you touched upon the paradox of money losing value over time. And challenges the traditional notion of money as a reliable store of value. And you're also suggesting that time enhances the value of most things. So let's talk about the perspective of time as a store of value influencing individuals' perceptions. Because as Bitcoiners or as people who are into economics, we're sort of familiar with this concept of store of value and one of money's function of store of value. So how do we approach the notion of time as a store of value?
Fiat is not meant to be a store of value. It's meant to be almost like a government equity where the government can kind of move the pieces of the economy that they're trying to grow around. And I liken it to equity because it's kind of like, imagine if we're all living in one country and that country is a company, and sometimes a company can have bad management and they can print more equity, print more money, and dilute that value of your equity. And so that tool should not be money in a sense that you store your life savings in it. It needs to be used and spent, and it's kind of the reason for fiat is high velocity transaction. You're kind of using it and spending it so that we can kind of do trades with each other and grow the economy. And, you know, when your government, high GDP growth and all that stuff is what you're measured, your benchmark is measured on. There's a need for something that people can store their value over time and across, you know, generations. And there isn't really anything like that that is accessible to everyone. What's incredible about Bitcoin is that it is not only this medium of exchange where we can actually zap it very fast across the world, and that doesn't get talked enough about, but the game-changing thing is that everyone in the world with access to the internet, or you can even access Bitcoin not through the internet, but the accessibility to an asset that holds value is now so much more prevalent that it evens the playing field for everyone. You can now store your value over time so that your wealth can accumulate over time, so that your purchasing power grows over time, and so you are able to utilize that wealth and shape your reality in a way that you couldn't have done if your wealth was constantly being leaked.
There's another aspect where after Bitcoin, I recognized myself being more conscious about time in general, like being more intentional with my time, because I know that time almost equals energy. You have the block time and there's energy, the energy aspect into it. If I allocate this time into working, into contributing to my hobbies, into kind of improving and bettering myself, then there's this prolonged consequences, this exponential growth potential. And that's combined with a low time preference, I guess, as a Bitcoiner. So this one line of lyrics says, when we just when we divorce action from consequence, we defy the law of physics. At its core, the concept of divorcing action from consequences suggests a disconnection between our choices and their outcomes. So what happens on an individual level and societal level when there's this disconnection going on between choices and the outcomes in general?
So broadly, if you divorce action from consequences, that's a lot. That's something that you tend to see online. For example, you can spam anyone at any time, and it doesn't cost you that much money to spam someone. And so it's, how do we bring that level of accountability, that consequence, back into the virtual realm? That's one aspect of it. And another aspect is, we're seeing this play out in the fiat realm, where there's a lot of money printing action, and the people who are making the people who are doing that action are divorced from the consequences. They don't necessarily feel the pain of inflation themselves, because they're the ones that receive the money first. So, for example, when I was working for the New Zealand Sovereign Wealth Fund, we had to invest our money to grow the wealth of the country so that we can help our older generation retire. And through that, the benchmark is, of course, we have to beat inflation, but then kind of grow that at a larger scale as well. But this whole needing to beat inflation means that we're taking higher and higher risk. We're going to the kind of edges, investing in early stage, venture capital funds and things like that. But the people who are raising these funds, the venture capital funds, they're the ones who are benefiting from getting more funding for their funds. And so they get to charge more fees and things like that. And so there are people in the economy that benefits, or are, taking advantage of the situation of inflation, money printing. They don't really necessarily feel the consequences of it that much. But eventually, fiat zero-sum game, they're kind of pushing that inflation somewhere for someone else to feel. People who are don't have savings or don't have the ability to save in assets, they are feeling that on a weekly, daily basis. And so when you live in a reality that is divorcing that action from the consequence, when the people who are causing the actions and imposing this consequence to everyone else, you are defying the law of physics, because you're not like, we can't create more time, we can't create more energy, then how come we can create more money, which represents that time and energy that we're trading for with real goods and services that takes that time and energy to create?
You touch upon this concept of kind of break the frame of societal rules and propagandas in the Break the Frame song. So let's talk about this one. The concept of breaking the frame suggests this radical shift in perspective and basically a rejection of conventional norms. So how have yourself kind of break the frame in your personal life? And what do you think the idea of breaking the frame means for personal transformations? Do you have any practical advice or personal approaches you take to develop a more authentic understanding of reality and liberating yourself from those external influences?
I grew up in two different cultures. So things that seem normal for one culture is different for another culture. And I understood that from a very early age. And so it was easy for me to kind of be like, okay, like, it's okay that things aren't like this in this country. And so the concept of kind of breaking the frame has always been instilled in me. You know how when you go to, or you're living in a different country and you feel like you don't quite fit in, but you really try to fit in because you don't want to stand out? That feeling is such a normal thing, because humans want to like blend. They don't want to stick out and they don't want to be like targeted. But at the same time, you're not being the authentic you. You're cutting off parts of yourself to fit into the mold. You try to dress like them, you try to speak like them, and you feel bad if you don't, look exactly like them or whatever. And that's more prevalent in a society where there are rules that are set by someone else, someone that doesn't have your background, your problems, and things like that. And so you don't feel authentic. And so you combat that by first understanding, like, this is what I'm doing. And you question, like, why do I do that? Because you will never be the best them. You know, you can never be more them than them, yeah, or whatever it is. But you can win. And by winning, I mean being the most, you know, happiest and more true to yourself by really embracing who you are, because no one can be more you than you, which is, but it's more like what the world really, the funny thing is people feel like they have to be different, but what the world really applauds and what the world really needs is difference and different mindset, a different way of doing things, a different way of explaining things. When you understand that, okay, being different actually serves a purpose, then you feel a little bit more brave to take that step forward into doing something a little bit different. And I find that kind of Bitcoin allowed me to discover what it is that I wanted to explore. And, you know, I love writing poetry. I love music. I love creating films and short stories and imagery and all these things. And I find that even in the Bitcoin space, I kind of get pigeonholed to being a rapper. Like, I'm the furthest thing from a rapper. Like, when I think of rapper, I think of like
gold chains,
a guy with gold chains. rapping about like bitches and hoes and stuff. I'm like, that's not me at all. And so it's easy to be pigeonholed. And I didn't help that by calling myself the Bitcoin replicate. I've changed now to calling myself post fiat poet. There is no category that defines what I'm doing because I'm just creating it out of thin air as I go, kind of just building it as I go. And so it is my responsibility to kind of communicate that with the world and show it through proof of work. And the people who experience that have seen my live performances, they get that it's something different, but we don't really know how to define it yet. And that's not a bad thing. It's just something that's a work in progress. So it's sometimes scary to be different. It's confusing. You don't have a laid out path in front of you saying you're going to be an associate, then a principal, then a CEO or whatever, you know, like there's no path. You're creating it as you go, but that's really empowering. And I think that's what the world really needs more of. And, the more we can do something different, the more we're going to build resilience into our society. So I'd encourage all of your listeners and yourself to continue doing what you're doing and, you know, embrace your individuality and allow value to flow to you through Bitcoin, because you're going to attract people who appreciate what you do. You don't have to fit the mold in order to get value nowadays.
And there's a different aspect in what you're saying is the aspect of being true, because you are doing a lot of things. You're making things up as you go. There's no laid out path. And it's not necessary of you trying to be different in that sense. It's you just truly embracing who you are as a person and combining these things that genuinely interest you, that you have a passion about, that you're very excited about, that you want to contribute to, like a bigger mission that you want to contribute to. Those things all come from the bottom of your heart. And in a way, our society doesn't necessarily crave difference. We're craving authenticity. We're craving truth. We're craving people that are comfortable in their own skin, and they're just the most charming people that anyone can meet when they're comfortable with who they are, when they like themselves as a person, which is in a way so unfortunate to come across these days. Like, most people have this or that concerns of who they are, or they have never really thought about the question of who they are as a person. They're kind of get pushed into different scenarios, into a ladder of getting closer to the money printer, like you said, and they haven't had the chance to stop and think for a second, wait a minute, like, what is money? What is me? Like, who I am? Like, what do I like? What I dislike? What, you know, infuriates me? What makes me passionate? And these questions we ask about ourselves are so fundamental in discovering who we truly are. And that's the stepping stone of creating a unique package of what you can offer, what value you can bring to the society. And we're all, as humans, we're all products of our environment. And what Bitcoin, it's so fascinating, is that it creates this environment, both monetarily and community-wise, because of the Bitcoiners that your individuality is celebrated. Your value that you bring to the community is celebrated by the community, both on a monetary term and in a human connection term. And oftentimes we can be strong and we can break the frame of our current environment, but there's so much resistance if you don't do it right. And oftentimes if you're so painful in your scenario, maybe it's just because you're in the wrong environment. And like you said, you were kind of struggling with your ideas and communicating with the venture capital people or communicating with the people from TradFi or in the political scene. And then you knew yourself enough to say, oh, these people don't like my ideas. I'm going to go somewhere else because I know I'm right. Like, you had that understanding and confidence in yourself. And that was, that's really brave of you to dare to say that. And it's a lot of knowing about yourself to really have that confidence that you're right here.
It's not so much the I have the confidence to leave, but it was more like I was so tired of pushing for something that I know that wasn't aligned with the, like, their goals and their mandate. So it's pretty much just like when I no longer felt the values were aligned, that's when I had to leave. And that's happened every time in my life. And it's always worked out really well when you kind of just let your kind of inner, like, yeah, your inner self guide you. It was scary though. I don't think I was, like, you know, confident and like had high convictions and like, you know, I'm going to go do this and it's going to work out. It was not like that. It was more like, I don't think this feels right. This isn't for me. I can't imagine doing this for the next 10 years. So I'm going to find my way out. But it was interesting. My old boss said, and this has always stuck with me, it's such a good quote. He said, the prize of a pie eating competition is more pie. And it's like, if you're doing the work and you don't enjoy it, but you're hoping to get like promotion or whatever it is, you realize that when you get promoted, you're going to have more of this work to do. And so I was like, do I enjoy this pie? And I was like, I don't enjoy the pie. I don't want any more of this pie. I want to go and find different flavors of pies or different things to eat. And so it was more like, yeah, that was really a really good, insightful quote.
It's such a miserable place to be stuck at, to be in a pie eating competition of a pie that you just really hate. Like, imagine that.
Or you just realize there's more to the world than pie.
That's true. That's true. I think it comes down to the leap of faith a lot in life. Like, we should all really trust our own intuitions and gut feelings of what tells right, because we have this mind-body connection where our mind is connected to our body. And when we're physically reacting to something that it doesn't feel right, we should, well, more often than not, we should trust our instinct, this evolutionary wisdom that's within us. And let's talk about the creative process of your work and your performances and your work blend a lot of the medias together, including music, poetry, and the visual elements to convey really powerful messages about Bitcoin and its potential to reshape our reality. So what is your creative process typically looks like? Give us a sneak peek behind the scene on the process of your creation.
I have a weird process, and I would compare it to kind of like an equities research process where you are researching initially and you're trying to put together the pieces and connect the dots, and you're shaping a narrative to lead to an outcome that you desire. And so for me, it's all about the message that I'm trying to send. That's the most important part. And it's like, what can I bring together to compellingly create this message, whether it's the imagery that supplements the lyrics, which if I can't say it verbally, or it doesn't make sense to say it verbally, or it's more powerful to show it in an image, then can I pull that image to supplement the lyrics? The music aspect is kind of like, how do I help guide people through the journey, through the emotions? And so to me, it's more than writing a song. I wouldn't even call it a song. It's kind of like this piece of like a short film, performative art, whatever it is. But it's just the basis of it is what is the most important message the world needs to hear right now? And how can I convey that in the most convincing way possible and most enjoyable way possible? Because I know my audience are really smart. They're really smart people, and they are short for time. And so I want to respect that time, and I want to respect their intelligence by doing the work so they don't feel like they've just wasted, you know, 5 minutes listening to something that doesn't make sense. And so I have very high standards for for the things that I put out there.
What would be your source of inspirations?
I have like a mind map almost of all the things like this. I recently created a performance called Dawn. So this is my mind map for Dawn. And it's basically like, all these different things that I want to connect together. And and so it's a massive kind of like, when I get inspired, I'm like, how do I link it together? How do I tell a compelling story? How do I kind of put all the pieces together in a way that makes sense? And right now, like if you're looking at this, this doesn't make sense, that much sense the way that I kind of initially structure it.
You're really combining the creative aspect and well-researched mentality into this. This is very extensive, I have to say. This is so extensive. So much details in all of the things you do. I think that explains why there's so much to uncover in all of these lyrics. And you pick any individual lines, there's so much to dive in, from ideation to the finished product to launch. Like, how long does it typically take for you to finish one song?
There's actually three songs in one performance. So I wouldn't call it one song, but I'll call it like one story. And from start to finish, I would say it would take like 3 months, just because it's kind of the research phase, the distilling of the key messages, and then it's writing a story that makes sense, that is logical, and then crafting the music. So I use stems. I buy stems, and it's almost like DJing and mixing the music together and cutting and editing the stems, making sure that in itself, the music, there's no lyrics, the music actually makes sense in terms of the story arc that I'm trying to tell. And then kind of getting that logical structure, putting it into words, and the words, each word has to have an impact, and it has to fit with the beat of the music, which is where the kind of people think it's rapping, but it's kind of like there's a lot of work behind the lyrics as well. And then supplementing that with the right imagery to tell the story. Are there moments, for example, quiet moments in the songs where I can create a certain theme, a certain feeling? And so that's where the movie, the direction, the writing, the editing comes in. That's nothing to do with songwriting, but it's helping convey that message. And then all of that, making sure that it flows. And then again, being the performer, how do I perform this? How do I sing this? How do I say this? How do I convey it in a way that enhances the lyrics? What words do I emphasize? And then it's kind of like, how do I market myself? How do I go to these conferences or the organizers and present it as a different way of sharing an idea that isn't a PowerPoint presentation or just a speech, but it's like this whole new way of conveying information. So there's so much more to it than just, I'm a rapper, I write songs. And so there's so much more to it. And I really appreciate opportunities like this where I get to explain it and a little bit more. Sometimes I want to do like a behind the scenes videos, but then I'm like, can't be bothered, move on to the next project. I have so many things to write and so many things to create. And so, yeah, I really appreciate this opportunity to explain it a little bit more.
Particularly wanted to dive into this because I understand how much work it goes into the creative work, and seeing the screen share, and even more so, it's like there's so much work and there's so much thinking that goes into every single aspect of the creative work you do. And I have a lot of appreciation of the approach that you take and the work that you put out. And I know there's so many people that are a fan of yours, of your work. But I think this opportunity would be great to have you explain how much work that goes into it, because those behind the scene effort is usually not mentioned or not known as much as the final product that you actually put forward. For people out there who are trying to develop a creative career, either in Bitcoin or outside of Bitcoin, what is a piece of advice you would give them to get started or continue their journey?
Every career is a creative career, and creativity should be a part of everything that you create, like do. Just because, you know, there's the more work that you do behind the scenes to create something flawless or experience or product for your audience or your consumers or your users, and the better experience you give them, the more likely they'll appreciate and stick around and pay you value for value for it. And if there are different creative ways you can, either in the process of creating a product, so if there are ways that you can scale your product so that you have more time to do other things creatively, like that's one way of thinking about it. Another way is if you're doing actual creative work, like doing films or podcasts or writing a book, your own unique flair is appreciated, because otherwise it just becomes the more of the same stuff. And it's just, people aren't going to, like, if they've heard it before, if they've seen it done before, like, and we're just kind of mimicking each other, there's no uniqueness in that. And I think it goes further when you try to put your own individual, like, twist to it. And I can't tell you what that is. It'll be your own uniqueness. But I'd say try to tap more into that. People will appreciate it.
As a creative yourself, how do you envision Bitcoin reshaping the landscape of the creative industry? There's the value for value aspect, and there's what about some other aspects in particular in terms of empowering artists and creators to monetize their work in a new way?
Just before the monetization, I'd say in the process stage, we are seeing new tools, especially in AI, where artists can now kind of be their own company as well, rather than just kind of being a part of a larger cog in the system where, you know, you have to hire a bunch of people to do this, you have to hire an agency to do this and be a part of this. Like, you can kind of just consolidate and do a lot of things yourself. And so that gives you a lot more freedom to move faster, to try different things without having so much admin bureaucracy. And that's exciting for people who want to create things that they've never really created before. Like, I don't have a background in music making or filmmaking, but I have the tools. We have the tools nowadays to do that and to access and to pay people for things that you can't do, and kind of just, yeah, allow you to be a conductor of your own orchestra and pull things together. So I think that's optimistic. In terms of monetizing, I would say the complementary to Bitcoin is Nostr, because Nostr is a platform where you can build your community, and no matter what client-facing app you use, you are able to keep that community with you wherever you go. So I'll give a shout-out to Tunster, which is a platform for live streaming music content. There's also Zapstream, that is a live streaming platform. There's, you know, Wavelake and all these other awesome Bitcoin companies that are helping artists access value for value and build an audience and build a community. And yeah, just kind of be open to using new tools.
That would be great. Looking forward to seeing more of your work in all sorts of platforms. It's great. It's been great learning more about your creative process now that I've seen you on stage. Makes me appreciate more how you've gone through such a journey to make such magic work. So thank you again for joining the show. It's been great knowing you, and I hope to see you again at your live performances and other Bitcoin conferences somewhere around the world.
Thanks, Vivian. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Live with Bitcoin. I'm your host, Vivian Shane, and I will see you in the next episode.